Welcome, y'all, to the Direct Examination Podcast. I'm Dane Phillips.
And I'm Joseph Bias. Welcome to Season 5 of the DE Podcast. My name is Joseph Bias. I am one of your co-hosts. I am a general counsel at a state agency here in South Carolina. Dane, who are you? What do you do?
I'm Dane Phillips, as if anybody could forget. I'm the criminal defense attorney that will take cases throughout South Carolina as they come. Also do appellate work. I'm with Price Benowitz, which is a firm that's headquartered in D.C. Fortunate enough to be here in South Carolina and have the resources of that firm. But yes, primarily criminal defense, as well as appellate post-conviction work. And, you know, just I think the biggest thing is, as a co-host of this podcast, I should have led off with, I am a co-host of the Direct Examination Podcast, that DE energy, as they would say, right?
We are coming to you strong with DE energy in Season 5. It would not be an episode of the Direct Examination Podcast if we didn't have to apologize for our co-host not being here. So we are thrilled to be with you. Amber, of course, is a family law attorney practicing with Jewett Dooley Firm. She is happy to help you with your family law needs. Dane is happy to help you with your criminal law needs. And I am not going to help you with anything because I'm not.
Look, you want to go get a degree and you want to talk to general counsel?
Yeah, then you can talk to me and my folks. But we're thrilled to have you. We're excited about the guest and what we have in store for this season. If you want to hear some of our previous episodes, you can go to our website at sclawpod.com. That's sclawpod.com. And you can also visit us on social media. We're on Instagram, I think.
Aren't we on Instagram? We are. We just haven't posted.
We just don't post on Instagram. But we post on Twitter and Facebook, right, Dan?
We do.
Okay.
And we're going to continue to do so.
We'll continue to do so.
It's the IG, that Graham, social media presence.
Right. And, you know, now that I'm on TikTok personally and I understand it, maybe we could do it for the podcast. I'm just saying, despite the gray hairs, I'm feeling a little youthful. So we'll connect with the folks wherever they are. Dane, this is our first episode of the season. How was your summer, man?
It's been an incredible summer. Obviously, we're still going through the pandemic. You know, it's been, I can't believe it's almost feels like 2 years, a whirlwind of anybody that's a practicing attorney who has active cases in court, like our illustrious guest, can sympathize and understand that it's been quite a whirlwind of start, stop, reschedule, continuances, trials. I was able, you know, to finally get a trial in. I mean, there's so many moving parts to this thing. Today, the Supreme Court issued an order changing some rules as far as the appellate court. And I do a lot of appeals. And so that changed, you know, our filing procedure. So right. For you appellate lawyers who happen to be listening, go check if you're not already getting the emails on the appellate court news. You need to. They changed the rules as far as there's that administrative order that came out from the Chief Justice or the Supreme Court on administrative the filing procedures for appellate cases. That changed today. They rescinded that order and put some different things there. So always need to be looking out because every day's different. You know, I've heard today, I don't want to say because it still could be rumor, that there was a court or at least one circuit where court's been shut down because of the numbers and outbreak. And so, you know, we're always seem like we're hanging off the edge of the cliff waiting for that next shoe to drop. And right. So it's been a wild ride. You know, the best thing for me and is that you know, I got my two beautiful girls, and so it's been a great summer. I got to spend a lot of time with them. You know, they're not, or at least the soon to be 5-year-old's not in school over summer, so I got to spend more time with her.
Good. Yeah, it's been a wonderful summer, pandemic accepted. We hope that as you are listening to us, that not only can we educate you, but we'll entertain you hopefully, and we'll keep giving you the content that you've liked so far.
In that same vein, I forgot to forward you the email, Joseph.
Okay.
We got a great testimonial.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So I spoke at the South Carolina Bar Criminal Law Essentials program. One of the attendees sent me an email and said, he's from Georgia. Okay. He said, I found, you know, I want to thank you for the podcast. He, of course, thanked my co-host mm-hmm. and said that he's from Georgia and this podcast helped him be able to connect to South Carolina and how old, you know, who the players are,
right?
The interesting workings of, I mean, we got a great testimony.
That's,
in
that, how that's much you good.
Thought, and that made me feel great.
I am thrilled that somebody had that. I hope that wasn't like a sneaky diss to us. Like, you know, oh, I understand that South Carolina from listening to you dummies. But no, shout out to that guy. And we look, if we're doing something positive for you, let us hear it. Like Dane said, we like to hear.
I don't know if he wants me to shout him out. So we'll keep it.
Yeah, just.
But send me a follow up email. We'll give you a shout out.
There you go. Look, we are shills, if nothing else. So we want to thank our colleague and our fourth co-host, Ali Minagakis, for filling in and doing some bonus episodes over the summer. If you haven't heard those, a lot of them have to do with the death penalty and dealing with, criminal justice reform. So I have a criminal justice co-host, and we happen to have an illustrious guest who's sitting there very patiently waiting on us. But if you have interest in those topics, go back and listen to some of our shows from the summer. Allie and her friends at SC4CJR did a great job with the podcast takeover. We want to thank her for that. Now, before we get to our guests, we are going to try something this year that we have never tried before. We are on episode, I think this is episode 95 or 96. For our 100th episode, so if you're listening to this, we have not said it on social media. This is the first time we've talked about it. We are aiming to do a live show in Colombia at a place to be named later. I don't know if we can say yet, but it's going to be on September 22nd, 2021. So September 22nd, 2021, if you listen to the show, you can come out, meet us at this place, listen to us record a show, hopefully a good show. You'll hear us without edits, which is, you can hear what we actually sound like. And we can all hang out and have a good time and celebrate us doing 100 episodes of the show.
Right. You want to be on the podcast? This is your chance. Yeah, <that's right. laughs> you come by, we're going to put right. you on. We'll give you the Q&A.
Right. If you buy us a drink, you will definitely get on the show. So that's something to look forward to. Follow our social media. Keep tuned to this show. We'll have more details soon, but we're excited. And mark that on your calendar, September 26th.
I mean, how incredible is that? Would you have ever thought when you and I first discussed this that we'd be at 100 episodes? Never.
No, never.
Look, our never. Guest is shaking her head, and she's like, and I've listened to this show.
I've been on the show.
She's shocked.
I think anybody who's listened to the show is shocked that we got to 3. So 100 is pretty well done. But we have delayed her too long. Look, we always have, Dana, as you know, illustrious guests. We've had judges. We've had Supreme Court justices. We've had, great trial lawyers. We very rarely have national TV stars. But today, Dane, our guest is Susan Williams. Susan is a criminal defense attorney. She's a former prosecutor at the Charleston, South Carolina area, where she focuses on criminal defense. If you have been watching court TV, and I know with all of the things that's been going on this summer, you probably have. You've probably seen her. She frequently appears on that network as a guest legal analyst, most recently discussing the R. Kelly trial, the Robert Durst trial, the Britney Spears conservatorship case, and other cases, including the Murdaugh case, which we'll talk about today. She's been featured on Fox National News, The Nancy Grace Show, Fox 28 News Savannah on the South Carolina Murdaugh Mysteries, and she's been in CBS New York and on BET for the R. Kelly case. You might have heard her on this very podcast last year, and anecdotally, it was one of our most popular shows where she discussed how to run a lean law firm. Susan has owned the law office of Susan E. Williams since 2008. She joins us today to discuss her work, the Murdaugh case, and of course, being an international celebrity. Welcome again, Susan Williams, to the show. Susan, good to see you.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Now, Susan, we're friends. We're colleague criminal defense lawyers. I'm not saying that all this national news came after you came on our podcast.
Wow.
But, we got a track record where somebody comes on the podcast, they win an election. I'm not saying you came on the podcast and now you're a celebrity.
You know, I have to give credit where credit's due. It must have been the podcast.
Right.
Well, I mean,
we'll take that. We know that Nancy Grace listens, and that the people who run Court TV listen. So we just appreciate them for giving you the bump. You know, we always knew you had it in you, kid.
The credit is all yours. But
yeah, absolutely.
It's just a coincidence. A coincidence.
Susan,
but I'll do fun. You're an incredible lawyer. You've certainly earned every bit of accolade you get.
Thank you. Thank you so much, y'all. Appreciate it.
Now, Susan, we want to talk about your firm in a second and your practice, which, of course, if they want to see more about your work, they can go to www.swilliams-law.net. Susan, you've been on TV and in the media recently to talk about the Murdaugh case. Now, before we get started, you know, Dane and I, we have no opinions about this matter. We're not going to give any opinions. We know that there's been rumors and speculation and everything else. We're not going to get into any of those. And frankly, we're not as educated on all the opinions that people have. No.
At a base level, nothing that's going to be discussed in this podcast would not be able to be discussed on a court journalistic moment that's been done by Susan and other journalists. And so this is not a time for opinions. And there will be no opinions presented. This is just reporting things that are filed in legal documents that's already been reported in the news. But again, we know a lot of people would like to know more about it than just the quick clips they get. And Susan has her box full of legal documents. She has done a lot of work in this. And so no better person than her to be able to come on our show and talk about it.
Okay. So, Susan, if people have been living under a rock, if they don't know anything about it, can you tell us about the investigation regarding the Murdaugh family and essentially what happened?
Sure. So I think to start it off, one would need to know the history of the Murdaugh family and how incredibly influential and successful they have been. In 1910, the Murdaugh firm was established, and then in 1920, the senior Murdaugh began at the solicitor's office. For those who are listening that are not from South Carolina, that's the prosecutor's office. And from 1920 until 2006, A. Murdaugh has been in a position at the solicitor's office. Obviously, different generations. But in 1940, Randolph Murdaugh Sr. was tragically killed by a train. And that firm is very famous for train deaths, for tractor trailer deaths. They're very powerful, it's very talented lawyers, very successful law firm, plaintiff's law firm. And so they started, back then you could be a plaintiff's lawyer and a solicitor. So that's what they were doing. Fast forward all the way to 2015, and there was a young man named Stephen Smith, whose body was found dead in the middle of a country road in the Low Country. It was ruled a hit and run, but that case has since been reopened. We'll talk about that in just a moment. And then in 2018, there was Gloria Satterfield's death. She died tragically from a trip and fall. There was a settlement for $500,000, and Alec Murdaugh was named as a defendant in that civil settlement. And then in 2019, Mallory Beach, who was 19 years old, died in a boating accident. As a result of the boating accident, Mallory Beach died, and two other people who were in the boat were injured seriously. And then in 2021, bring us up to most recently here, Paul and Paul Murdaugh, who was the alleged driver of that boat that I just mentioned, that boat crash, and his mother, Miss Maggie Murdaugh, were found murdered, and there have been no arrests made in those deaths. So all of those deaths, all of them connected in some way to one of the most influential families in the history of South Carolina. And I failed to mention that in 2021, Randolph Murdoch also died just a few days after Paul and Maggie were murdered.
And that death was natural causes, more or less. There's been no allegation relating to that death, Randolph Murdoch.
That's correct. No allegations whatsoever. I believe that he was ill for some time.
Right. And what we have at this point is all allegations. And as far as the most recent kind of update to the story is there's no suspects to those murders. Is that accurate at this point? Or has there been any?
Yes, that's my understanding.
Okay. Now, you know, in the legal field, a lot of people don't realize there's a big difference between a person of interest and a suspect, and how that implicates basically what we're doing right now, discussing certain cases and bringing people's names and that. And so as far as we know, and we want to put out there publicly, there are no suspects in that case. You know, in a homicide case, first 48 hours, and that's, you know, just a general rule of thumb, is some of the most important time in an investigation, and certainly within that first week or so, because evidence goes stale. You know, there's evidence that can be lost or destroyed, and preservation of not only physical evidence, certain forensic evidence, and of course, digital evidence, that's something that comes up all the time. There's so many unanswered questions that cannot be released in a pending investigation. That's another thing for our listeners. When there's a pending investigation, law enforcement doesn't have to reveal all of the documents or all of the evidence that they've obtained at that point, because it could impair or impede or obstruct the pending investigation. So there's probably a lot of different things that we don't know, and I assume that, and you know, that's something that we just have to wait to see how the investigation unfolds. But just for our listeners, for them to understand kind of the status of where it's at, is that all fair to say from what you have learned, Susan?
Yes, that's all 100% correct. And I do want to circle back around very quickly back to the Satterfield, the Gloria Satterfield, where I mentioned was a trip and fall. I mentioned that Alec Murdoch was a defendant. I don't know if I mentioned, but I meant to mention that this was a civil action. This was right. A non-criminal action. That means that Mr. Murdoch was never charged with any. This was a civil action. It was non-criminal. And in fact, in Ms. Satterfield's obituary, it listed as those that she loved as her family were Alec and Maggie Murdoch and other members of the Murdoch family. So I wanted to make sure that I made that clear on when I said defendant, that I meant a civil defendant.
And another thing I wanted to kind of make sure, so that family, they were the circuit solicitor, the head prosecutor for that area for 85 straight years.
That's correct, for the five counties. And I'm pretty sure that they broke a record in South Carolina. I'm not aware of any family with that much success and power. I'm smiling as I say this because they have done so many wonderful things for people. And I think the media has just completely skipped over that. You know, they've put away murderers. They have put away child molesters. They have put away rapists. And then for people who have been killed in accidents or seriously hurt in their plaintiff's work, I mean, these are folks that have been helping people. Yes, they've had lots of power, but they have been extremely generous with their talents and resources over all of these years. They've had this law firm for over 100 years.
I mean, that law firm, I mean, they're well known as far as just having, when it comes to wrongful death cases, like you said, specifically railroad cases and trucking cases, to be just highly talented. I mean, you wouldn't, when it comes to those types of cases in South Carolina, I mean, they are the go-to law firm in many respects because of the skill level that they have in dealing with those cases.
I agree 100%. They're the gold standard.
Susan, You mentioned Stephen Smith and that you wanted to come back to him. That was a criminal situation that happened as a result of a hit and run. Why is that situation why was that case reopened?
We haven't been privy to exactly the exact reason why it has been reopened. All we know is what has been released by SLED, and that is that in conjunction with the investigation of the double murders, the Stephen Smith case has been reopened, and that is all we know, and that's all we know.
And one of the, in this case has had so many twists and turns. You mentioned the Mallory Beach boat investigation, and before all of the events that happened this year, we heard about this Mallory Beach investigation, and that got a lot of national attention because one of the other passengers on that boat was Paul Murdaugh, who was a college-age young man and the son of these attorneys. As you mentioned before, Paul and his mother were killed, and that's more or less the investigation that's going on now. Can you talk to us a little bit about where the Mallory Beach investigation is, and then we can go into the investigation into the murders of Paul Murdaugh and his mother?
So sure, where the Mallory Beach investigation, the criminal investigation or the civil matter? So with the criminal investigation, as a result of the criminal investigation, Paul Murdaugh was charged with 3 felony counts of boating under the influence. One of them resulted in death, 2 of them resulted in serious bodily injury to some other passengers. There were 6 passengers total on the boat. All of them were under the age of 21. And so that's, no one else was arrested. No one else has been arrested to this date so far on that.
And Susan, I believe I read somewhere that since the passing of Paul Murdaugh, they actually dismissed the remaining criminal charges. Is that correct?
That's correct. The AG's, the Attorney General's office, was handling that prosecution. And when the late Paul Murdaugh passed away, or I guess that's sort of redundant, but when he passed, the AG's office did dismiss those charges against Paul. So no one was ever convicted of that. And he was never, we never saw anything go to trial. He is presumed innocent. He was not proven guilty.
Susan, I know one of the things that our listeners probably want to hear about is why the delay in the prosecution in the criminal matter. I think if people are sitting at home just listening to the time frame, we have an accident that occurred in early 2019, and now we were in the writing up to the middle of 2021. When the murders of Paul and Miss Maggie Murdaugh occurred.
So the typical time frame for 3 counts of felony boating under the influence when we're not in COVID times is about 1 to 2 years. And I know it doesn't really seem that way when you look at different TV shows like CSI or Forensic Files or whatever. We see an arrest, a few meetings with lawyers, a trial and a verdict, and all that happens in like an hour with commercial breaks. And that's just not how things are going right now with COVID or how things normally operate in the criminal courts in South Carolina anyway. First of all, in our general sessions courts, which is like big criminal courts, what some folks call it, we're only in session a week or two out of each month, out of each year. And when I was a prosecutor, we were the ones calling the cases to some extent, but it's changed a little bit now, but the same priorities sort of exist where we wanted to try to help alleviate jail overcrowding and save taxpayers money in housing inmates. So we would try to move the jail cases first. And as we know, Paul Murdaugh was not in jail. He was out on bond. So he would not be on this priority list to move his case. The next priority after the jail list typically is people who are not in jail, but they have cases that have been pending the longest. And so beyond those types of considerations, we've got to schedule attorneys, judges, witnesses, expert witnesses. They could be coming from out of state or whatnot. Law enforcement, they may still be employed there, retired, deployed if they're in the military. Solicitors, which is like a district attorney, like I said earlier, in South Carolina, and court staff, all very busy people. And aside from their personal schedules, there was COVID. And
so, Susan, I hate to jump in here, but, you know, basically COVID definitely is the curveball that changed the timeline of everything. The backlog that already existed was significantly increased. And as you talked about with jail cases, the emphasis to the people who are listening, the reason they go first, everybody's got to be reminded, just because you're arrested doesn't mean you're guilty. They're innocent until proven guilty, whether it be through a guilty plea or through a bench trial or a jury trial. And so because you have people who are innocent until proven guilty sitting in jail, there is a priority given to those people to give them their right to a speedy trial, whether they filed one or not. They still, the administration of justice, you can't have innocent people sitting in jail without their day in court and having that opportunity. And it's a sad fact that for major felony cases, it's not unheard of for somebody to sit in jail for year, two, three, and for some 4 years, especially a murder case, 2-3 years is not unusual or unique. And that's, I know, a foreign concept for our listeners, and we've addressed it in other podcasts, but when you throw in COVID, where court is shut down for basically a year, that just exacerbates a problem that was already, again, we already had a Band-Aid on, on the bullet hole. And so it was just made it worse.
I agree 100%. And then when we look at some other factors, such as one of Paul's attorneys is a senator. And so senators are able to be understandably excused during the time that they're in session, which is usually somewhere around January to June of each year. And then we have the usual delays that we have all the time. People have car accidents, things happen that cause delays, flat tire, whatever. People were having to homeschool their kids. So, you know, processing evidence at SLED has slowed down to a snail's pace, unfortunately, and is no fault of SLED's, the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division. And, there's so many things that were going on, so many moving parts, and the Attorney General's office was handling this case. And there were, I don't know how many different agencies, law enforcement agencies, handling it as well. So communicating, okay, what evidence needs to be processed? What does the Department of Natural Resources have? What does the Beaufort County Sheriff's Office have? What is, right, you know, all of these different agencies communicating and then getting with the prosecutor? It sounds like they would all be on the same computer system or something, but it just does not happen that way. It's a very non-linear process.
Susan, what happens next? I know that there was some news, we're recording this on the 25th, there was some news that came out today that the solicitor recused himself, or that a solicitor, excuse me, recused himself. Can you talk about what's kind of happening next with this investigation, and what do you expect as far as procedurally what the next steps will be?
I don't know what exactly the next steps would be, but what I would guess is that once the investigation is complete, then if there ever is an instance for someone to be arrested, someone or some people, I don't know, one or more people may or may not be arrested. I don't know, but that could be something that we may or may not have in the future. We may or may not have something come out different with the Stephen Smith case if it has been reopened. But understandably, the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division has been has been keeping things close to the vest, not as to not compromise their investigation. And I understand that they will not rush this case or any other case. There's a right way to do things in a fast way. And I feel confident that they're doing things the right way, making sure that they have everything that they need for a thorough investigation.
So again, Susan, this is an ongoing investigation. And obviously, if anybody who's listening has any information that could be of any help to law enforcement, I'm sure they'd appreciate the tips. But in the meantime, we'll continue to monitor this, and we'll obviously have you back on if there's any major developments. Before we get you out of here, I want to ask you about another case that you're monitoring, the R. Kelly trial. Now, this one is far removed from South Carolina, but this is just Joseph as an R&B fan talking. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because that whole thing has gotten a lot of play, and you've been a guest analyst for that. Can you talk about what's going on with R. Kelly and where are we at with that case?
Sure. So we are now on day 5 of the R. Kelly case. R. Kelly, for those of you who do not know, who've been living under a rock, he has been dubbed the king of R&B. And I certainly am a fan of his music. I believe him to be an incredibly talented artist. And he is in federal court in New York right now on allegations of racketeering under some RICO. He's charged with, I believe he has 9 different charges. There are 6 victims. They're identified in the indictments as Jane Doe, but some of them, we can kind of figure out who they are. But basically, he's charged with having a criminal enterprise. They're charging him under the RICO statute, which is usually used for like gangsters and mobsters. And they're sort of going a different route with R. Kelly, and they are going back 30 years of conduct. Right now, we, of course, are in the U.S. Attorney's portion of they're putting on their case, and it has really been some incredible testimony. I can say that, very interesting testimony, and the court's closed to the public, of course, so we can only get updates through whatever Court TV, of course, is reporting it, but there are also lots of other networks reporting it on it as well.
All right, Susan, we're going to get you out of here on, we usually have our guests do war stories. You've been on the show before, you know how it goes. We want to ask you, though, what's your favorite or maybe even your most embarrassing moment? You're now a TV star. You've been on Court TV. There has to have been something that's gone wrong before.
Let me think. Yes. So I was on live Court TV, and sometimes I'm recording from my home, and I have a dog. Had been quiet for the entire, usually they're 2-hour segments. And right whenever Court TV, it was time for me to go, he just howled as loud as he could. And he was on the recording on Court TV, and I was mortified.
He's jealous.
Yeah, he wanted to get his airtime.
Get his 15 minutes.
That's right. Look, we have had Dane's kids make an appearance. My dogs have made an appearance. I'm pretty sure Evie has made an appearance on the show.
Evie and the cats.
Evie
on
and
separate
the cats.
Occasions.
So this just means you're part of the family now with us, Susan.
Yep, the puppies, the whole thing.
Austin's popped in a time or two.
There you go.
That's who I'm talking to off screen. I'm like, no, you had the baby monitor.
Susan, thank you so much for joining us, taking time out of your busy schedule for us. We appreciate all the work that you're doing. And of course, if they want to get more information on you, your work, and you actually are you're not just a TV star, actually you're a practicing attorney, doing a great job for clients. Tell us about your website and your social media.
Sure. And thank you so much for having me on. My website is www.swilliams-law.net, and you can find me on Instagram at Carolina Lady Lawyer.
It's great.
As seen on TV.
Yeah, as seen. You can see you on Court TV. You can look at your YouTube channel where you can have the clips. And of course, there are also clips of you and your various TV appearances on your website. So we thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time. And of course, if you want more information about this show, you can go to our website, sclawpod.com. You can follow Dane at @SCCrimLawyer. You can follow Amber at @RedJudicata. First episode back, guys. We're still working our way into it. And then you can follow me at Joseph P. Bias on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter. Go to the website. Thank you for listening. And we have some exciting shows coming up soon. So we're excited to have you back for season 5.
Be prepared. That's all I can say.
There you go.
Very ominous, vague response.
Right. We'll enter some like ominous music right here as we, you know, at the end. All right. So thanks for listening, guys.
Thank y'all.
Thanks, y'all.